Okay, you're back with us at GoldSeek.com Radio. Today's featured guest, Andrew McGuire. Andrew McGuire, an independent London metals trader for at least four decades, decided to tell the public what many folks have been concerned about for quite some time, especially over at GATA, our friends there, Chris Powell, and of course, Bill Murphy. It's a pleasure to welcome Andrew McGuire to the show in his debut appearance. Hello, sir.
Well, nice to be with you, Chris.
What an interesting story. And apparently, J.P. Morgan, HSBC, a few others may be manipulating the precious metals markets. By now, most people know there's something amiss, but you have delved down into the minutiae. Tell us more, please.
I think, yeah, if we sort of wind back to, if you recall, back in 2008, and I think what really brought me into this was the real world aspect to what was going on. When we saw Bear Stearns go down and we saw JP Morgan take over Bear Stearns, for example, and we saw the silver price drop from 21 down to 8.5. You remember that in a matter of months. It's one thing to be looking at a chart and it's one thing to be looking at a dot on a screen, but what really got me interested in exposing this, what would be, to be honest, a very lucrative trade, was the fact that real-world people were suffering. And, you know, when we see mines being shuttered and people being put out of work, just general hardship, I mean, this is all part of the problems that we're seeing in globally with a few people in control of so much. And it really irked me to see this. So basically what I did was put together some evidence which was absolutely clear in my mind and quite damning, and presented it to the CFTC, which is, of course, the regulator for commodities. And we assumed, of course, that they'd be very interested in this whole story and that they would be very keen to act on it. Little did I know that we were opening up a sort of a hornet's nest. Normally, I know that good old Ted Butler for many, many years, and I must say that it was Ted that first alerted me to the fact that there was silver manipulation. And so I will credit, everyone should credit Ted for his hard work over the many years. But essentially what happened was I presented some evidence. The CFTC had never gone back to anybody. I mean, they don't call anyone. So I basically said, look, I've got inside information here. And they were all over me. I had to sign all the paperwork. And I think they were looking to see if I was involved in any way, which I wasn't on the inside of this thing. I just discovered what was going on and presented it to them. Sat with them for many months, in fact, over a year, showing them, walking them through, giving them slides, warning them of upcoming events, coming manipulations, a bit like saying, well, look, you know, there's going to be a bank robbery at a bank machine on this particular road at 3 p.m. tomorrow. Can you just be there? And of course, so, you know, when you do that 85 times, and there's nobody ever there to do anything about it, you start to lose faith. Essentially, long story short, and I know that a lot of people have a very bad feeling about Bart Chilton, but he was the one commissioner that at least answered questions. And I know everybody seems to have doubts and say, well, he was, you know, he was just part of the story and trying to keep everybody, you know, befuddled by being the good guy of a bunch of bad guys. But I don't believe that for a minute. These commissioners have never responded to anybody ever before. And he, in his good name, did respond to every single email he ever got, no matter who it was from. Long story short, I got frustrated. They were doing nothing. The CFTC was doing nothing. I was sitting with the regulators. They weren't doing anything. At that time, there was a metals meeting being called on the 26th of March, 2008. I was invited by Bart Chilton to come and present some evidence to, they were going to have HSBC, JP Morgan, all the major banks, the bullion banks were all going to be there. I have to note that JP Morgan didn't turn up for some odd reason, especially it was a meeting about the metals markets, and well, you know, one of the biggest players decides to not come. But HSBC did turn up. But anyway, 3 days before the meeting, I was suddenly uninvited, and there was nothing Chilton could do about it. I was on the live on the phone with him for the 6 hours of the entire meeting, though, and he was presenting my questions. But just before that, I got frustrated, and dear Adrian Douglas, who is no longer with us, unfortunately, I presented him he was director of GATA. I presented him the evidence I got and just dropped the bombshell on them and said, look, I'm not invited directly. I'm going to be having I'm going to be live on with Bart, but on the other hand, could you please, is there anything you can do to get this evidence in? Well, Bill Murphy, as we know, was invited to that meeting, and he did present that evidence. And it really created a bit of a bombshell, because at that point there, no one had ever discussed the fact that I think the bottom line of it is that the questions were asked directly through, say, Bart Chilton, asked HSBC, and this is all on record. That video is still up and running on the CFTC site. It's 6 hours long, and basically asked questions of HSBC, which I phrased to Bart. Is there or is there not 1 ounce of physical to back up every ounce of futures contracts? Well, no straight answers, but the bottom line is that the first time it raised the issue that there was high leverage. And we had industry apologist Jeffrey Christian come on and say, well, yes, so what? It's 100 to 1. But that statement in itself, nobody had ever had that statement before. No one had ever seen that statement before. No one was talking about this kind of leverage that was going on. And I think that I know for my part, I was receiving telephone calls from clients and people that I'd never spoken to before saying, is this for real? Can this be for real? That this is fully accepted that this leverage is 100 to 1? I think we'll find that right after that, I mean, I don't think it's a coincidence that gold rose, what, $700 in the next few months after that, and silver rose significantly higher. I think people suddenly woke up to the fact, well, you didn't have to be a lover of gold and silver to realize you could smell a trade here. There's something not quite in balance. So perhaps it's time to, if it's not in balance and it's been, and this is the kind of leverage involved, well, the sharks move in and start smelling blood in the water. So they come and squeeze it. And if there's a big short position, you're going to squeeze it. And I think that's exactly what happened. And the, you know, obviously we all know what happened when it got to the highs. The May the 1st, 2011, when it reached almost $50 silver, how we all remember how on a bank holiday in the UK and Europe, bank holiday in all other parts of the world, China on holiday, somebody in the COMEX decides to wake up at 1 o'clock in the morning and dump massive amounts of silver into the marketplace. And of course, we all know what happened. That was a $6 move down in a matter of an hour or so, which is what, $30,000 per contract. You know, suddenly someone decides that this is the right time to get the best price. But it really says how difficult things had become for the banks, who over time had, and Chris Powell does marvelous work, you know, also, of course, Bill, detailing and documenting the rational reasons for why these sort of leverages had built up and why interventions happen. And of course, now, you know, all the pointed fingers and said, you know, that's impossible. It's not plausible. You know, how can this kind of conspiracy be held down? How could no one have talked about it before? Well, of course, we now fast forward to today and everybody fully accepts. Well, of course, there's manipulation in every market. So, you know, it's interesting to see how just in general, how, you know, how the people are viewing the market in different ways than they did just back in 2008, 2009, when none of this seemed it could possibly be happening. So now it's such interesting times, because what's happened is essentially we've ended up in a position where these banks who were so highly leveraged had accrued those positions over time. And I think Chris Powell's done a marvelous job of explaining how that happened. And there was the gold carry trade that was born by Robert Rubin. And, you know, when you've got 8-11% interest rates, you know, you lend gold into the marketplace, you flog that gold off, it disappears into a black hole, and you invest that money into some other high yielding assets or bonds or whatever it might be. But over time, and the temptation to leverage, of course, and the fact that you're running a fractional reserve system built up these massive amounts of leverage and underwater positions. And if, you know, if those pesky people that come and take physical in size wouldn't have turned up, none of this would have ever been a problem. Unfortunately, people woke up to the fact, and this has been a slow progression, but people have woken up to the fact that there's a mismatch. There's an imbalance in the market. There's not a true value here. So now we have we see divesting, and you've done some marvelous work in your interviews with many, many eminent people who've explained very well why we've got problems. You know, why it is that that people are, like the Chinese, are divesting their dollars like it was sand running through their fingers. They just want out of dollars, and they want to buy everything from land to art to gold to silver and mines, you name it. They're divesting themselves of their dollars. But, you know, we're talking about gold here, so gold has been one of the things that they've been accruing in very large size, you know, for all the reasons that many of your guests have discussed.
Well, I concur with you. I think that it's fascinating to see the sea change in understanding with regard to manipulation. And I'd like to underscore this idea of 50-1, 100-1 leverage. Go back to, let's say, the 1920s. It required about 10-1 leverage to lead to the great bubble that we now refer to as that, you know, stock market peak of 1929 that led to the Great Depression and whatnot, or at least it was a vital component. So we fast forward and we hear Andrew McGuire say, oh, 10-1. No, 100-1. And you start to get an idea of what we're facing. It gives those, particularly at the top of the pyramid, I think, a remarkable lever for manipulation. And that's the next thing I'd like to move into, the silver market. And you've done such an eloquent job outlining the mechanism behind the scenes holding down the market. And you talk about tens of thousands of contracts sold short. If you know precisely when the market is going to crater, you have that inside knowledge, the potential profits are in the millions. Can you give us an idea of what you think is going on here, or at least happened in the silver market?
Well, absolutely. But as traders, we follow these footprints, and it's really easy to see who is selling in size and when they're timing sales for liquid market conditions, and very much timed when there's a trend line or a pivot that's so blatantly obvious. You know, we see these 2 a.m. in the morning, suddenly someone comes in and decides to unload a product. Well, you know, you have to remember, we have to remember that there are 6 primary bullion banks that hold gold accounts at the Bank of England. Now, that gives them, whether we want to acknowledge it or not, that gives them an inside track. And, you know, obviously the Bank of International Settlements has a very active trading desk. These 6 bullion banks interact with the Bank of International Settlements on a daily basis. For example, last non-farm payrolls, you know, okay, we wonder, who was it that front ran that? You know, who is it that repositioned themselves? Well, you know, if you're in the inside, you would know that number. Put it this way, the Fed knew that number days ahead. It certainly wasn't everyone suddenly uncovered it 5 minutes before when they released it to the news services. And so, you know, you'd have the Bank of International Settlements placing orders and buying and sell orders, and of course the 6 primary bullion banks that have accounts there would of course be fully aware of that. And even if there was no direct, this is the exact number, they would know that somebody was positioning short or long. And of course that gives you an inside track. And you know, you don't know how far You know, don't know how far those boundaries extend, but certainly we found out through many instances, really, since the LIBOR scandal, since these chat rooms that are up, since these various things, that it's quite common for insiders to share information and trade on it. So it's not conspiracy theory. This is what happens. So, you know, but I think what is really interesting, because as much as we all fully acknowledge that there's manipulation in the markets and that that there are a certain few insiders that control it, I think what is changing, I think to me, is, yeah, but where are the changes? We see these wash and rinse cycles, you know, in a synthetic market, which is primarily the COMEX, which is a non-delivery market. I mean, it amazes me that I say, give you a head shake to people when you actually think that a price is being set in a non-delivery market.
The Shanghai Index, this comparatively small market, nevertheless, it does deliver, and they are delivering a remarkable amount of bullion. And then shouldn't we trust that price?
Absolutely, because delivery, I don't know if any of your listeners have ever been in the COMEX vault, but delivery constitutes a forklift truck picking up some pallets and driving it across a blue center line in the warehouse to the other side. That's delivery. And to me, and obviously, I mean, there's some legitimate transactions, but essentially that's what it is. I mean, there's such a tiny percentage. I mean, the audacity of backing up a Brinks truck and asking for delivery. I mean, you know, that's just not done. It's not playing the game. But I think what's so interesting is, as you say, the fix. You know, for example, the fix. We see the fix coming, and then the new so-called transference fix. I mean, nothing's changed there. And I think what we forget is that this diluted fix price, bearing in mind, also encompasses about 500 to 600 tons of gold traded in a day and cleared in a day, and some nearly 5,000 tons of silver cleared in a single day. It obviously dilutes the fact that when you have a physical a fix occurring, that it's not all physical, that there is huge dilution in that, and that there's because there's a degree of gaming in that, and the reliance on the fact that these LBMA clearing banks, you know, settle amongst themselves, much like COMEX is shuffling stuff around the warehouses, very similar at the end of a day with the LBMA bullion banks are shuffling stuff around. And of course, there's a small physical offtake. And that's the interesting thing, is because, you know, obviously 3 to 5 tons might come in from producers every day. That's legitimate organic sales. That obviously is part of the process, but that's diluted too. I think, you know, I finally, you know, what really, really sort of gets me excited is the fact that, as you say, there are other fixes now, and there are fixes coming from physical markets, and the physical markets are no longer in the US or London. They are simply not there anymore. They have migrated. The LBMA have lost control of the physical market and is now firmly in Asia. I think, you know, what really excites me is that the conduit, the competition that is now coming up against these LBMA bullion banks, who are still sitting with a residual underwater position that's been accrued over time, over many, many years, and suddenly this physical is evaporating out of their hands. And I think, you know, I don't know if you've heard about the very shortly to be announced, the allocated bullion exchange, which is a physical marketplace that enables every single person to access wholesale physical metal directly without going through any of the LBMA systems, and it's going to totally level and arbitrage the divergences between the paper-centric markets and the very increasingly liquid physical markets. And this price is going to be determined by real physical transactions. You know, and that's going to be conducted full time, seamlessly, 23 hours a day. I mean, the leveling process there is already underway because we've already, the founding company, for example, Bullion Capital, I'm part of a membership exchange where there's lots of us brokers who are just simply transacting outside, physical, outside of the LBMA system, and it's something they never envisaged, and this is a massive game changer. And you know, so I can be or one of my clients, or I can be trading for a client against, and on the other side of that trade there may be the Bank of China. There's no visibility anymore for the LBMA bullion banks to know who is buying or selling those physical contracts globally, and that the loss of visibility for them, it ruins the game for them. So next time somebody decides to come in at 2 a.m. With a sell order in the COMEX market, it sets a physical, ultimately sets a price, and that price is going to be pounced upon by somebody in the wholesale market, and that's not going to happen again. So bearing in mind we have these changes coming, so I think it's very encouraging to see that these continuous manipulations that people are so skeptical will go on forever, I believe are going to end, and they're going to end in this 2015. Within this year, they will end.
That's going to be a remarkable change in transparency throughout the sector. I'd like to ask you about this backwardation situation. We've had James Turk on here, friend of the show, for a decade now, and he was one of the first in the industry to point out the significance of gold and silver backwardation, but particularly with the yellow metal. His primary point is that why would gold in the future be worth less? Why would we have this state, not of the natural contango, but in backwardation, and for such a lengthy period of time? You could argue that we haven't seen anything like it ever in the markets, and you've also tackled this tough issue. Tell us more, please.
Yeah, and James is of course a real expert in what he talks about, and I must say I do like James. When I look at backwardation, I'm looking at, and I think a lot of people look at it differently, and I think the way you have to look at it is not futures to futures. So you're looking out, say, the curve from June to next December, and that you can look out and on that curve. However, that is a dilutive curve. That is, again, based upon a futures market that has a non-delivery market. So what I like to look at is the real spot price, i.e. the cash price of gold. So every morning I look at the cash price of gold, and that is where I can take a bar for, and I can literally sell it for, because everyone follows the real spot price, which is XAU USD. It's as simple as that. That means I'm either long against the dollar on the foreign exchange market, or I'm short against the dollar in the foreign exchange market. But that relates to the physical price. So that is what I can transact my physical for. So here's the question. Why would I, when there has been permanent $1 and up to $1.50 per ounce backwardations, i.e. I can sell my spot for a buck to $1.50 higher, then I can buy a front month futures contract which is going to expire in just 2 or 3 weeks, and I could do that in any size I want, hundreds of thousands of ounces. Why wouldn't I do that? Why is nobody doing that? Why is nobody arbitraging that? It's simply because the physical isn't there to do it with, and nobody trusts to unload their physical. I'm not going to unload my physical on a trade and just simply say, oh, I'll get it back in 2 or 3 weeks from now. Well, maybe I won't. Really, do I want to be selling my physical at this point? This is the interesting thing. You then look at the co-basis, which is obviously, when you look at the backwardations, we also look at the co-basis. And that's also evidencing tight supply. I mean, we're talking about as bad as it's ever been at any price level. And that telegraphed, and I already 2 weeks ago said that's telegraphing a $1,300 price right now. And that factoring in fractional reserve dilutive inputs. But, you know, obviously the real price, well, I mean, that's anybody's guess, Chris. I mean, because, you know, obviously that if you take the dilutive aspect out, I couldn't, if you asked me what the price should be, I wouldn't know other than it's significantly higher. But even based upon the inputs that are dilutive, $1,300 was $100 higher than we were last week was already obvious. So, you know, I think, you know, we have to look at these things. And it amazes people don't look at the technical side of it, the pure mathematics of it.
We did have Rob Kirby on recently, and he's done considerable work in the area, in particular in Asia. Now, according to his sources, that the actual price of large blocks of gold, now we're not talking the typical day trader here, watching the blips on the screen and in the office, significant size can be as much as $500 to $600 over our current spot in order to obtain delivery. Does that answer the question somewhat?
No, I think you're absolutely right. And what we do know is that size is almost impossible to come by. You're not going to get size at current spot prices. And that's absolutely correct. So I think what we're seeing is a market that is so divergent, the price of gold is so divergent from the reality that there can only be, we're heading for a cash settlement. I totally believe there is only one solution to this. This is a hugely underwater situation. It's developed. It wasn't anticipated that the physical market would migrate away from the control of the LBMA. They're sitting on massive derivatives in the billions, and those derivatives is the only reason that we see price suppression is because there's massive derivatives exposure. And as I said to the CFTC all those years ago, you don't do anything, one of these days the physical market is going to run over these two big to fail banks, and it's going to force a settlement.
Well, in particular, when you don't have the deliverable physical gold, I mean, as you've pointed out, Western central banks simply have run out. The central bankers don't have the stockpile to suppress gold. It's getting thin in their vaults, according to your work.
As you say, there's no central bank. They're too busy eyeing each other with suspicion now. And they're repatriating. Everyone's looking to repatriate. As you say, there's no central banks now lending real physical into the market. Place that to me has to result in one of these days we're going to have an overnight settlement. It just is the only way where it won't be considered a default. And bear in mind that these fractional reserve accounts are in an unallocated form. Most people don't realize they don't have any right to the gold at all. And one of these on a Friday night, between a Friday night and a Monday, what they'll do is they'll just be a cash settlement, and that'll be the end of it. And what's another few billion on an electronic keystroke to settle everybody out, and everyone walks away except people who held their gold, or the pension fund who thought they diversified part of their portfolio into physical gold or gold, and suddenly wake up and find that they're on the sidelines with no exposure to it whatsoever.
Now, as we wrap up here today, I wonder if there are any other topics that you'd like to share with the listeners.
No, I think really, other than the fact that I'm so excited now that things are changing, finally that things are changing, and that the control that these bullion banks have had over the market is evaporating, and we will at the end of this year, I predict strongly by the end of this year that the markets will be turned on their head, changed radically, and bullion will trade at a real fair value.
Well, you know, we've seen some remarkable changes already. I mean, just look at how fast gold skyrocketed in terms of rubles. Just a few months, we can see events unfold, and it seems to happen at a much faster pace, you know, in this digital world that we live in now. So any other contact information you'd care to share today?
Right. Yes. Well, I do offer a trading service under my name, which is Andrew Maguire, goldtrading.com. You know, obviously I just track the markets intraday, and I let people view what trades I'm taking, when I'm taking them, and the rationale for it, intraday commentary. So that people find that quite helpful. I have a lot of institutions that follow me on that basis. But I think more interestingly, I'm now trading wholesale physical for some very large clients and some large funds now. And that's really what the focus, I think. I want to stay on the physical side of things, and I want to be on the right side of a very large move, change in the wholesale market. So I think we're finding so much interest now on the wholesale side of things. So that to me is the focus that I have at the moment.
Tell us a bit more about this exciting service. Your market moves in real time, or I presume in real time.
Well, literally, I mean, this is it. I mean, I log on probably 5 or 6 a.m. in the morning and literally do an analysis, check the backwardations, look for the levels and the probable, the highest probable entry levels and exit levels that I think are appropriate for the day. And literally, I track that through the entire day and literally, you know, just tell people I'm buying it here and I'm selling it here. And people choose to follow me or not, or just use it. I mean, you know, basically, to me, I look at it as an educational service, but I know that there I have a lot of people who are trading in the hundreds of contracts again. And there are people, then I use that information and then try and gain a little alpha for people who simply have large core holdings of physical, who then vault that physical, and we trade around that position for them, that basically so that they can they want to be have exposure, a bit like a hedge fund in itself. But I don't charge any of those fees. I don't charge any fees for trading on behalf of them other than the normal exchange fees that we have. And so really, I just basically that's what I do, and I fill my day up, and it's a very exciting and a really exciting and enjoyable business.
It sounds like a great service, and I know our listeners will be quite interested. Andrew McGuire, we appreciate you taking time today, and I know our listeners will as well.
Thank you very much, Chris.
Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.